No matter how dope your work is, no matter how big an impact your ministry is, or no matter how much money your business makes or how many people you can employ, it really ultimately, when the rubber meets the road in the long run, the thing that you pass on in and through your work is you.
Welcome, you wonderful, purposeful, and beautiful humans to Hope Still Wins. I'm your host, Ben Higgins. Hope Still Wins is a place where we get to know thought leaders from diverse backgrounds and differing worldviews to help us feel less alone, more connected, and move us to become a better world together. Each week, I'll be interviewing inspiring and relatable guests in attempts to get to know their hearts, celebrate their stories, and explore the concept of hope to hear how and if it has played a role in their lives. Ultimately, answering the question, does hope still win? If so, why? And if not, why not? This week, I'm sitting down with a leader that has greatly impacted me over the past year, Justin McRoberts. I first discovered Justin and his work on Twitter. His words resonated with me and brought light to some of the questions I've been wrestling with lately. Have you ever gone on Twitter and found somebody that you're intrigued by their opinions, their thoughts, how they come to their conclusions? Well, Justin's one of those people for me, and I reached out, and well, this week, I was able to interview him. Justin is a Christian thought leader, songwriter, podcast host, author, and in my opinion, an extremely talented artist. The way Justin uses his talents and art to provide language to some of life's biggest questions have helped shape me, and I have high hopes he will be a blessing to you as well after listening to this week's episode. We talk about how to become a person of justice. We also talk about why you are the ultimate gift you can give away. And finally, we talk about Justin's new book, It Is What You Make of It, which is one of my favorite books this year that I've read, and it's absolutely incredible, and it's out right now. Many of you have submitted answers to the question of the week proposed in episode 8 with Cezanne and Stevie Hendricks. As a reminder, the question was, what does the good life look for you? TJ said, being healthy, content, and being with the ones I love. There you go, TJ. Being healthy. What does that mean, TJ, to you? What does health look like to you? It's a question I'd love for you to ask yourself. Kelly said, the good life to me is living into my identity in Christ, which includes using my gifts to serve others, following my God-given purposes, having freedom from false narratives, and experiencing the fruits of the Spirit, no matter the circumstances. This is absolutely awesome, Kelly. Let's break this down for a second. It's not about herself, it's about others. And I think one of the interesting things about service is it oftentimes brings us a joy and a fulfillment that cannot be done without the help of serving others. It's really cool to see, and I'm glad you're using those gifts for that, Kelly. The world needs more people like you. Thank you, everyone who submitted answers. They were all, and dare I say this, really, really good. All right, let's get started. Here's my conversation with Justin McRoberts. Justin, thank you for joining Hope Still Wins.
I'm thrilled to be here. Thanks for having me.
Your book is in my top at least two favorite books of this year, and I say that because I have read some books, even including mine.
Good.
The book is called It Is What You Make of It, Creating Something Great from What You've Been Given. And I want to use this book as kind of the catalyst for this interview. But to get started, if people are not familiar with you, do you mind giving a little background on yourself?
Sure. So I live in Martinez, California, which is just east of Oakland, where I was born and raised in Northern California. Currently what I have an 11-year-old boy, I have a 3-year-old daughter. My kids are heading out in a couple minutes, to go swimming and then go play some music. So we're an active and musical family. I write books, I run a podcast called At Sea, and I do a lot of coaching with, ministers and entrepreneurs and artists. So most of my time is spent with my family or spent writing and working with folks who write or working with folks who are in relationship with others trying to make better things happen in the world. That's what my life looks like.
You also are pretty good at Twitter. That's how I originally came across your stuff. You continue to post things, and I would be intrigued and curious. Your a lot of your stuff was not only like healthily convicting, but also compelling. And as most of the people that come on the podcast, I found you and I looked up to you through Twitter and through the statements you're making.
Yeah, I one of the things that, you know, I've wrestled with over the course of the last, I don't know, like decade or so, has to do with like online relationships and like the are there real connections that happen online? Like, is it a positive or negative place? And that's one of the things that I approach a little bit in the book, but it's like part of the ethos of the book is, it's a space. The Twitter can certainly be volatile and weird and kind of ugly, and so can your Facebook feed and so can your Instagram feed. But it really is. Ultimately, it's a tool, and how you forge relationships, how you use the platform, ends up still being the question. It is what you make of it. Even Twitter is what you make of it.
So that's where I want to dive in, and I want to talk a lot about the book. I don't want to talk too much because I want people to read it, because I believe it is helpful and I believe it is necessary. But I do want to talk about the concept of making things new and adding energy into these things that maybe you've existed within, these systems or a family dynamic or relationships or jobs or hobbies, whatever, and adding a new energy to it. Why was this the message that you had to get out there?
You know, when I was working with W Publishing to decide because I brought two books to the table, and one of them had to do with the relationship between rest and work, kind of establishing like a rhythm between rest and work. And that was the one I was leaning towards because it was a message that I've been teaching. And literally there was like a class that I've been doing off and on for like 6 or 7 years. I was like, let's make this a book. I was ready to do that one. And then no joke, man. Come March of 2020, every single dollar I knew I was going to make that year left the table in 7 to 10 days. So come the beginning of the second week of March, because of the pandemic and because of shutdowns, I looked into the year. I literally, like, everything I planned on doing was completely off the table, was just gone. And I had to look at where I was and face that choice. Like, what do I do now, right? And I can either, like, be intimidated by my circumstances, which were very intimidating, or I could look around my life and see what I had on hand and see what I had available to me and make a decision. Like, what do I make with what I've got on hand still? Like, all these things are gone that I was planning on. The plan fell through the floor. I had no control over all that. So what do I do now with what I've got on hand, with the time, the talents, the resources, and relationships I've got? Which then locked in for me, like, this is the book I actually want to put in the world. I had these stories I'd been telling about reinvention, about relationship and risk-taking. And it seemed like a neat idea at the time, but it didn't seem as necessary. And then as soon as my life faced what I was facing, I wanted to be able to tell the story. So that was the moment I decided, like, this is the book I want to put in the world, because it'll be a year and a half or so, man. Like, after things even open up, and then they'll sort of close again, then they'll sort of open up, it'll be a year and a half again. And like, a lot of us are going to be reinventing and reimagining for a really long time. So I wanted to put this book on the table and say, hey, there's a pathway forward.
If I can get personal for a second, you know, publicly, I just did an interview a few weeks ago, and I talked about how I was kind of breaking down. And I guess when you come from a faith background, maybe breaking down feels a lot heavier, heavier to the outside. I'm breaking down right now because everything's changing for me personally. You know, you got to think. So I have a coffee company that I operate. So we have coffee shops. One of our coffee shops closed. The other coffee shop barely made it through. We had to let go of a lot of staff. Restaurants. So in 2019, I invested into 3 restaurants. 2020 was not a great year for restaurants. Podcasts look a lot differently today than they did a year ago. A book. I had a book that I'd worked on for 2 years, and in February I release it, and there's no book tour. So it's very isolating and odd. And I say all this to say that, like, what you're talking about is ringing very true to my heart. And I felt alone for a few weeks because I'm thinking, am I the only one in this? Like, am I the only one that feels like I have to pivot on everything, that some of the dreams, the goals, The motion at which these things are moving is now changing. And now I sit in a season, and I wonder how many people you've come in contact with through the book, or maybe even yourself. Now I sit in a season of feeling excited, yet scared.
Yeah. Yeah, and one of the, I mean, you're talking about your, it was the interview I think you did in Page Six, and one of the things I loved about you peeling back that layer was, and this is part of what I get after in the book, is like, whether it's your work with Generous or other things you've done in your life, like, it's never the thing you're doing, like, ever. Like, no matter how dope your work is, no matter how big an impact, like, your ministry is, or no matter how much money your business makes or how many people you can employ, it really ultimately, when the rubber meets the road in the long run, it's never actually the artifact, it's never the business. The thing that you pass on in and through your work is you. And so, like, that moment where, you know, you decide to publicly say, like, I was really struggling in March and this is what it looked like, it allows people to look, like, past the artifact to the person in the artifact and actually make that connection. That's where people find hope. People don't find hope because they see a really great work and they're like, oh, maybe someday I'll get to make something like that. People find hope because they see the people behind that work and think, if he can do that, given his circumstances, if he can do that, given his limitations, then maybe I can do that as well. I am always the gift I'm passing on. This is my sixth book. I did 18 records. Musical records before that. I run a podcast. I've helped plant churches. I've helped develop, you know, justice cultures. And in every single thing I've done, part of what I got to over the course of these stories that I put together in the book is, like, I've been the gift I've been passing on the entire time. Those things are ways I give myself away, but I have been the gift I'm giving the entire time. That's why I love the article, because it, like, it peeled back that layer. Like, this is the person behind these really interesting and good work. This is what makes the works resilient, is that this person's committed to them. That kind of thing gives hope to people.
Are you looking to make a meaningful, lifelong connection with someone who shares your beliefs? If so, then you've got to try Christian Mingle. With over 15 million Christian singles, Christian Mingle is unlike any other faith-based dating site. Their ability to help members make quality connections is what sets them apart. They have robust profiles and personalization features that help you connect with other like-minded members. Plus, their suite of communication tools help you meet more people and make deeper connections. Finding your true love is one of life's greatest adventures. So, discover why so many Christian singles find love at christianmingle.com/hope. That's christianmingle.com/hope. What you're saying is universal.
Yes.
You know, you're speaking to me personally, but what you're saying is a message that I really took out of the book. With even in the first, like, couple pages, the organizations that I work with do a lot of poverty relief. And 15 years ago, when we entered into poverty alleviation and fighting injustice, many of times we came into church buildings or we came into leadership groups, and people would be like, What do you mean you're going to try to combat poverty? It's just always going to be there.
Yes.
Like, it's always, like, it's just a thing that exists.
Yeah.
Which after a while you start to believe it, and then you start to work within it, and you start to see solutions, and you start to see progress, and you start to see momentum and energy. And one of the things that I get out of your book, and the message you want to share, and this isn't just a promotion of your book, it just is so powerful to me, that you're claiming, that your claim, I'm going to speak for you for a second, tell me if I'm wildly wrong, but your claim is that no matter where you're at in life, no matter who you are, what you've done, what platform you've been given, what accomplishments have been marked to your name, no matter what you've done, you have a role in asking yourself, or you have an ability to ask yourself the question, when I see injustice, when I see things that fire me up, if my mind goes to, well, it is what it is, in that moment, there's a opportunity to say, Now there's a solution.
Absolutely.
Talk about that.
Well, so, and this is one of the reasons, one of the billions and billions of billions of reasons I continue to look to the person of Jesus, because in relationship, this is a Jesus who's he's walking around with his followers, and the disciples come to him at one point. And this is a story I vamp on in the book, when the disciples come to him and they point at this this crowd of, you know, they say it's like 5,000 men, right? And which means, like, including women and children, it's like 7,000 to 10,000 people. And they're like, hey, these folks are hungry. Let's, and this is the answer for them, is let's send them away so they can go get food. Because for them, there's just no way with the massive thing that they're facing, they could do anything about it. It's 10,000 hungry people. And these are guys who literally quit their jobs to follow Jesus around the desert. Like, we're not. And what Jesus says, the first thing he does, he goes, no, you feed them. And he puts them in a position to, like, ask the question, like, who am I in relationship to this thing? The second thing he does is he asks them to, like, take an accounting of what it is they actually have on hand, which is the thing I actually don't really do until I'm up against something I think is bigger than me, right? If everything I in my life is something I can handle, I'm never really taking, like, a full, sober, thankful accounting of my life. I'm like, I just take for granted the fact that, like, I eat every day, I've got enough to take care of myself. The thing that forces me into the blessed sacrament of paying attention to and be thankful for what I've actually got is coming up against something that I actually do believe is bigger than me, like global poverty. And what Jesus does, he says, okay, what do you have on hand? And once they hand it over to him, he does the third thing, which is, like, literally the hinge point, is he gives thanks for what it is that he has on hand. And that ends up being the actual doorway. You come up against stuff that's, like, it's bigger than you, it freaks you out, and you're right, you're not enough for this job. So let's take a look at what you do have on hand and then be thankful for what you have on hand, and then we can get started. What the problem with it is what it is that we never get to the part where we're actually thankful for what we have in our lives, because we're projecting this, like, monolithic, this thing is immovable, which is the last part of it that I'll get to, and then I'll pitch back, is when one of the things that I hate doing, I'm a 47-year-old white male. I don't like confessing powerlessness. I actually hate it. I don't like saying I'm not enough. I don't like saying I can't. So what I do instead when I come up against stuff like injustice and poverty that makes me feel small. It does, because there's so little I feel like I can do. What I do is I say that thing is immovable, and I project onto the thing this monolithic power, instead of confessing that in the face of this, I feel insufficient. That kind of dual-pronged moment of confessing my insufficiency and then being thankful for what I have is, like, those are the seeds of the gospel in me, in which, like, the actual power of God in Christ can enter into and then make something happen in my life, because I'm saying, I want to do something, I don't feel sufficient, but I'm going to be thankful for what I've got, and I'm going to put my best foot forward and see what happens.
I mean, how do you find the energy for that? If I'm somebody sitting out there right now, life has beaten me down.
Yeah.
I'm confused. I'm hurt. But at the end of the day, maybe my posture is, I just want to do something that matters. Like, I just want to do something that I feel does something good for the world. And yet I feel tired. I feel like this thing's immovable. I don't necessarily have the energy to even confront it. Like, how do I find the energy for that? And then, why? Like, why would I even try to go after it and try to move that object?
Yeah. So then I'll go back to that story about Jesus. And what he does, instead of like taking the bread and the fish and drop kicking it over the crowd and people get to watch it multiply in the air, which would have been dope. What he does is he actually splits this crowd of thousands and thousands and thousands into groups of 50. It's a really key moment. He splits them up in a group of 50, because you're 100% right. I do not have the faith. I do not have the faith, I don't have the hope, I don't have the strength for 5,000 people. I might have the faith, the hope, and the strength for 50. Okay, how about you just go do 50, and then we'll see what happens after that. And so that's what he does. He breaks them up into groups of 50, and then if I'm one of the disciples, I get sent out to this group of 50, and I watch this thing that still stretches me a bit happen, and then that sort of develops my hope. We're 100% right. These things that are massive, when we talk about systemic racism and we talk about global poverty, yes, this is way too big for you. But if you can sponsor a kid for $28 a month, you're making an impact. And then you figure out that you've been able to do that for a year, and you look back at the amount of money you've actually given away and that you've always been okay. Take the little step that you can actually take, knowing and believing, and this is the last part, that the one who's calling you into that work is sufficient for that work. You're being invited into a work that God has promised that God will finish. It's not up to you to finish. He's just inviting you in to do it with him. So do the small thing you can do. Find yourself in that rhythm. It's like going to the gym for the first time. Yeah, maybe you honestly are. Like, you're carrying 70 pounds on your body that it's going to kill you earlier than it should. And you can't go knock off 70 pounds in the first week. So just try to get to the gym once a week for like 2 months and see how that feels, and then pick up on that seed. So what small step can you take is almost always the question. There's always something to do. It might feel small. Let's just get started.
So we're going to pivot a bit here, because there's an underlying theme, I feel like, where it's inspiring all of us to have the energy and recognize the value within ourselves to go out there and take the first step to make the good work done. You're also a critical thinker. Like, you're thinking through a lot of these ideas at a deep level and discovering the threads and the truth to them all. So what continues to pull you back to Jesus? Why is Jesus staying consistent throughout your message?
The story that I end the book with is really the where the rubber meets the road for me. I mean, I am you know, personally compelled by the person of Jesus. I've had, you know, my personal encounters, and I'm not going to try to convince people of, because I've had a personal encounter with a person of Christ, then therefore it has to be real for you in the same way. That's fine. I get it. We have lots of religious differences in the world. The thing that I really love about the person of Christ in this context is, so there's this there's a series of trails about like 2 miles that direction, that in the winter when the creek rises, I can't cross this specific area. And usually if I get there, I have to turn around and come home. And at one point, this is several years ago, I got to that point and someone had built a bridge, which was awesome. That's so cool. Someone had gone out in the middle of the woods, like a mile off the main road, and built the bridge. I went out a few days later and someone else had torn it down. And I went out with my wife to go see, like, hey, this bridge is so cool. And we got there and it's like shredded all over the place. And she says the thing out loud that we say, like, why do people do that? Like, the whole, like, why do bad things happen? Like, yeah, I get that. I feel that. And there's no real great answer for that. I don't know. So then 2 or 3 weeks later, I'm jogging after rain and I'm figuring I have to turn around again because the bridge is gone. And this person had rebuilt the bridge, which is like a really cool moment. And it's great if the story ends there. But 3 days later, someone that maybe the same person had gone back out and knocked that bridge over again and dragged it way up the stream. So that caused this big boggy mess. And I get to that point of the trail and I realize this, that I've been bearing witness to. I've been watching on the sidelines, like, the war between creation and destruction, the war between redemption and darkness. I've been watching this from the sideline. And now I actually have a moment in which, like, I get to choose whether or not I'm going to get involved, which means I'm going to get muddy. I'm going to get sloggy. I might lose a shoe. It means I'm going to have to, like, change the course of my day in order to, like, make room for this thing. Cause it's like a big, heavy 200 plus pound bridge. I've got to, like, so I'm either going to, like, just continue to bear witness to this thing, or I'm going to get involved in it. So I dragged the bridge back and I set it back upright, and it takes me forever. In that moment, what I do is I enter into this back and forth battle that we're always bearing witness to, whether it's like the pandemic taking a store away or like people just hurting each other. I enter into that and I do so and I look a little bit more like Jesus, because what Jesus does not do at any point in the scriptures is give a really great philosophical, theological answer for the problem of darkness or the problem of sin or the problem of pain. He doesn't say, well, this is why things are broken. What he does is say, things are broken. I'm going to enter in and take that onto me. That's the example I have. And that's why I continue to come back to Jesus, because he doesn't try to explain things away. He just says, I'll carry that with you. I'll carry that for you. When things go sideways, and you and I have both been there, when things actually go sideways in my life, I really don't want to be around a bunch of people who are going to tell me why this and why that and do a bunch of explaining. I want to be with people who want to, like, just sit, carry that with me, listen to me grieve, maybe bake a pie or two, and actually actively participate in the healing process of my life. And what I find in Jesus is someone who's just way less interested in trying to explain things away and way more interested in getting neck deep in the muck of it and saying, like, I'm in it with you.
Taking another break from our conversation with Justin to tell you about one of our most incredible sponsors, Policy Genius. As you prep for back-to-school season, slide securing life insurance onto that to-do list between buying a protractor and some number two pencils. Policy Genius makes it easy to compare quotes and get you covered. Summer's almost over and responsibilities about to rear its ugly head. Get ahead of reality and get life insurance done now. With Policy Genius, you can get free quotes in minutes. If someone relies on your financial support, whether it's a child, aging parent, or even a business partner, you need life insurance. To properly provide for their families, most people need 10 times the life insurance coverage than they get through their employer. Policy Genius makes it easy to compare quotes from over a dozen top insurers, all in one place. Why compare? You could save 50% or more on life insurance by comparing quotes with Policy Genius. That's roughly $1,300 or more per year on life insurance just by comparing policies. The licensed experts at Policy Genius work for you, not the insurance companies, so you can trust them to help you navigate every step of the shopping and buying process. That kind of service has earned Policy Genius thousands of five-star reviews across Trustpilot and Google, and eligible applicants can get covered in as little as a week thanks to an award-winning policy option that swaps the standard medical exam requirement for a simple phone call. This exclusive policy was recently rated number one by Forbes, higher than options from Ladder, Ethos, and Bestow. Getting started is easy. First, head to policygenius.com. In minutes, you can work out how much life insurance coverage you need and compare personalized quotes to find your best price. When you're ready to apply, the Policy Genius team will handle the paperwork and scheduling for free. Policy Genius doesn't add on extra fees. Head to policygenius.com to get started right now. Policy Genius, when it comes to insurance, it's nice to get it right. So you had a choice in that moment to choose a path of participate. You did have a choice to participate, but you could have participated in creation, or you could have participated in the destruction piece. Both were an option for you in that moment. When people choose to participate in creation, in cultivating, in building, in investing, what do you believe can come forth in those moments for people, no matter where they're at in life and no matter what they've done?
The biggest thing that happens in those moments is that I take a deeper step, a further step, or I level up, however we're going to say it, and I become more the person that I am designed to be. That's the biggest difference. Like, yes, sometimes we, oftentimes maybe, we make an actual difference in the thing that we're doing. But really, more often than not, the thing you can guarantee is happening is that I'm becoming more the kind of person who does those works. I change, I grow, I am strengthened, I am deepened. In the moments in which I choose to step into like the darkness and the difficulty of really, really tough stuff in life, yeah, I probably hopefully do make a cultural, financial, social impact. It's what I want. The thing I can guarantee you is happening is I'm being shaped into a new and better and stronger person. Again, one of the stories from the book, I referenced my friend Sarah, who goes to, she goes to this person who runs an organization that rescues people out of slavery. Millions of people in slavery, and that's this huge issue. It's daunting. And she had at the time like a pretty substantial platform. We're talking about people with platforms. And she says to the guy who runs the organization, she goes, what can I do? Like, this is awful. I want to do something. What can I do? And what he says to her had such deep wisdom. He said, become a person of justice. Because what he knows is that the trend shows up and like for a little while, people get really excited about the work and they throw a bunch of money and time at it. But what really does the work of redemption over the course of time are people who do that kind of work. In other words, it's one thing to do it once. It's a completely different thing to be someone who wakes up in the morning and the thing on your mind is that there are kids in poverty and I'm going to do something today that rescues them out of that poverty. It's different than like 3 years ago, I threw some money at this organization. I hope it's going well. That's fine. But I want to be someone who actually does that work. I want to become someone who does the work as opposed to just doing the work. That's the thing that happens when we enter in, is we become those people.
And this participation is open to all. It's not exclusive.
Everybody. Yeah, and more to the point, like, boy, it would be a lot more fun and it would be a lot more effective and there'd be a lot more stories if more of us really did get in and we did our best to jump over or make a way around some of our differences socially, religiously, politically to get in on these massive issues and be like, you know what's actually more important than the fact that you and I vote differently is that there are kids in your neighborhood that don't have enough to eat. The fact that I live in Martinez, California, next to me is Pleasant Hill. It's one of the wealthier areas in the Bay Area. I happen to know that at College Park High School before the pandemic, Of the populace of like, I think it's like 2,200 kids or so that go to that school. There were 90 kids at that school who lived in their cars or lived under bridges or lived on the street or lived in a book. 90 kids at this wealthy-ish high school, 90? The fact that that's true, like it has to matter less to you that you differ with your neighbor politically or religiously. It has to matter more to you that there are kids in your neighborhood that don't have a place to sleep and are still trying to go to high school because they want to graduate. That just has to happen. Like that has to matter more.
Your art is beautiful, man. You've done good work. You will continue to do good work. I'm learning from you. And like I said at the beginning, it wasn't a joke. Your book has been a resource, a place for me to be inspired, to ask deeper questions, to be uplifted, but also confronted with the questions that I need to be asking myself right now. And I think it's beautiful. And I really appreciate your time today. We end every episode with the same question for every incredible guest that we have. And I want you to take as long or as short as you need to answer it. Justin, do you believe that hope still wins? If so, why? And if not, why not?
I do. I believe it does because it has to. I believe that hope still wins because it chooses to. And that's the difference. The difference between hope and anything else is the decision, the choice that like, despite circumstances, despite the math sometimes, I'm still going to get in neck deep. That's the difference. Hope wins because we decide it's going to win. Hope wins because what hopelessness does, what despair does, is it does the math for you and says, look how big this problem is. You have no, you don't have it in you to do. And what hope does instead is say, yeah, maybe not right now, but I'm not going to quit. And on the other side of that choice, we find people, we find resources, we find faith, we find power that we didn't know was available to us, that we didn't know was around us, that actually makes the difference long term in us and in the world around us. Hope wins because it is the decision you and I make to dive all the way in despite the math, despite the numbers, and despite the darkness.
If you want to hear more from Justin, you can visit him on Instagram and Twitter. As I said, I enjoy the Twitter follow. I really love what's put out there, but also the most recent book, along with a list of other books that you can find if you go to his website. This book is called It Is What You Make of It, Creating Something Great from What You've Been Given. Justin, thank you for your time here. It's been an honor. Thank you so much for tuning in to today's episode of Hope Still Wins. If you haven't already, please subscribe or follow the show wherever you listen to podcasts. If you enjoyed this conversation, please consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple and join the community over on Instagram at Hope Still Wins. That is it for today, my friends. Can't wait to talk to you again. We have incredible guests coming up. Share with your friends, share with your family. Keep talking about the podcast. It's something special that we're all a part of. Thank you again for tuning in. I'm your host, Ben Higgins, and I'll talk to you next week.